Thanks for tuning in to the Lean 911 podcast, where you'll have a voice directly from the Gemba. I will rely on my three decades of Lean successes, as well as my failures, to answer your most challenging questions regarding your Lean transformation. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio, President and CEO of Lean Horizons Consulting, and the principal architect of the Danaher Business System. Looking forward to your questions. Now, let's go to the Gemba. Welcome to episode 42 of the Lean 911 podcast. Mark DeLuzio here for another episode. On this episode, we're going to talk about the theory of constraints. I know there's a lot of TOC people out there today who are big advocates of Eli Goldratt's philosophy. But I'm going to talk about how we critically looked at the theory of constraints when constructing the Danaher Business System and why we chose not to include it in DBS. And there were some very good reasons. I also want to talk about Six Sigma, but maybe on another episode, simply because we did keep Six Sigma in the equation, except for we just did not treat it like Motorola and General Electric did, as the holy grail, like one tool fits all. We saw it as a statistical problem-solving approach, and we pulled it out of the toolbox when we needed that kind of sophistication. But there are some issues with Six Sigma. I am certified as a green belt, but there are some issues with Six Sigma that if you used it as the only approach, you're going to run into trouble. And I think some companies like GE and Motorola and some others perhaps found that out the hard way. Anyway, we'll get into that maybe on another episode, but I want to talk about theory of constraints. We looked at theory of constraints when the book The Goal came out by Eli Goldratt, and there was a lot of hype about it. That book sold a lot of copies, and there were all kinds of converts on theory of constraints. The theory of constraints, if I were to compare the theory of constraints to just Lean, if you think about Lean, which is really the formulation of Lean, was the Toyota Production System. Now, let's not forget that Lean was coined as a term in the book called Machine That Changed the World. So everybody started calling it Lean. I kind of wish they had not used that word. I mean, my company's called Lean Horizons. Unfortunately, because Lean has been misused in the marketplace, Lean got the black eye of less employees are needed, L-E-A-N, and that is not what true Lean is all about. However, it got the black eye because a lot of CEOs misused it, made massive headcount reductions, sometimes in the tens of thousands, and then got credit from Wall Street for calling it Lean. And Wall Street didn't know any better, but they got patted on the back as Lean gurus. And just between you and me, it doesn't take much to lay people off. That's an easy thing to do, especially when you're not the one that has to do it. You can, you know, delegate that to your staff. So that's not what I consider Lean. But anyway, we do call it Lean now, and that's what we're going to go with. But let me talk about a theory of constraints. You know, the whole idea is to manage the constraints. And if you think about the fundamental concept, In the book, The Goal, Goldratt talks about the Herbie. The Herbie is the bottleneck. Whether it's a machine bottleneck or any other type of bottleneck, maybe it's a supplier, maybe it's a equipment downtime or whatever. But the whole notion of theory of constraints is that you go after your bottleneck operation. Now, here's the rub. The bottleneck operation in the theory of constraints is viewed as the longest cycle operation in your process. Okay, so if you had a machine that took 10 minutes and everything else was under that, that became your Herbie. And the whole theory of constraints notion is go after that Herbie and knock that 10 minutes down until you get it below some other piece of equipment. Now that one becomes a Herbie. Okay, now that when you, let's say you knock 10 minutes down to 6 and you had one already in there at 7, now 7's a Herbie, you keep knocking that one down. What's wrong with that? It sounds a lot pretty logical, right? Not until you start talking about tack time. Tack time, again, and I have an episode earlier on tack time, is basically the rate of customer demand that you have to produce to. So if I told you that your tack time was 60 seconds, that means your customers are ordering at a rate of 60 seconds per your available time in your shift. And you need to produce a product every 60 seconds. So the fall off rate, if I stood at the end of the line with a baseball catcher's mitt, I should have a product fall off in my hand every 60 seconds, okay? If my demand goes up, I'm going to have a faster tack time. Maybe my demand goes up, I might have a 40-second tack time. I have to adjust to that. Now, what I want to do with that 60 seconds, and let's say in this case the tack time, is compare it against my cycle times. My operators cannot have a operator sequence in a one-piece flow environment greater than 60 seconds. That includes walking time, loading, unloading, doing the job itself, reaching for tools, assembling the part, whatever it may be, right? A machine cannot have a cycle time greater than 60 seconds. And incorporated into that 60 seconds, we have to consider the loading and the unloading of the equipment. So again, everything has to be within the tack time. Now, if I had a tack time of 60 seconds in my longest bottleneck machine, what, you know, again, TOC would call the Herbie, was 40 seconds, there's absolutely zero reason I need to spend engineering resources on reducing that bottleneck of 40 seconds down to something lower. Not unless I have a forecast that my demand is going to be going up and my tack time is going to get faster. So if I have a forecast in my sales and operations planning process that says, hey, demand's going up in the next 3 months, and the new tack time is going to be set at 30 seconds. Okay, now the 40 seconds is a problem. But I'm not going to reduce a Herbie and spend time and effort on reducing a cycle time of a piece of equipment if it doesn't violate my tack time. It's that simple. That's one of the main reasons why we rejected this, okay? The other thing that theory constraints assumed was that there's infinite demand out there. There's infinite demand, and there's not, okay? There's not infinite demand. I mean, it's great if you can grab as much demand as you can, provided it's a good business proposition for you. However, that's not an assumption. That's realistic, okay? So those are some of the real key issues that we looked at here. And, you know, theory of constraints also uses, you know, three different types of buffers, which are inventory buffers, to accommodate these blips in your cycle times. And we're looking in lean to go to flow, a one-piece flow process. And when we can't flow, we have to pull, right? But we never want to push. So the whole notion of flow does not exist in TOC. The whole notion of creating all these buffers do. These buffers, by the way, do not fly in the face, if you will, of lean thinking. Okay. So theory constraints has a very myopic focus on constraints, but doesn't offer any tools, meaningful tools, to drive those constraints down. Things like single minute exchange to die, total productive maintenance, quality tools. Okay. It doesn't exist. And when you look at all the different types of some of the key tools that they talk about this whole drum buffer rope process. Okay. Which, you know, the buffer is the inventory. And the releasing orders to the shop floor is the rope, and the buffer time before the orders are due. Okay, so it violates the just-in-time concept as well, okay? The constraint being the drum. Okay, so they got this drum buffer rope concept. We would end up spending a lot of engineering and management resources going after all these fictitious bottlenecks if we incorporated the concept of theory of constraints, okay? So this whole violation of tack time or ignoring tack time is a real big deal, all right? And they also talk about throughput accounting, which is a very convoluted way that they look at this. For example, they calculate, theory of constraints calculates inventory turns based on sales value rather than cost of sales value. So you get a very distorted input on that. Okay. So we want to drive overhead costs right to the value stream to get actual costs and get away from standard costing altogether. Again, no meaningful tools. It's a very limited type of thing. It's more of a theory, and they call it a theory of constraints. It's probably well named. Now, let's not forget that the theory of constraints, from what I can gather, all right, and I don't think a TOC zealot will ever admit this to you, was a really neat way that Eli Goelratt was going to sell his software. Okay. And we've seen this happen before out there in industry, where somebody comes up with a software solution as a silver bullet and wraps it around this whole business about this theory of constraints. In this case, demand flow technology, DFT, was exactly the same thing. This guy, John Costanza, created millions of dollars by duping people into an easy way to do lean. First of all, they didn't level load in DFT. No level loading whatsoever. By the way, that stuff is not even talked about in theory constraints. The whole idea, if you look at the Toyota Production System house, just in time and Judoka are the pillars. And on the bottom of the house, you've got standardized work, you've got Hijunka level scheduling, and Kaizen. None of those five things are mentioned. And that is the fundamental foundation of the Toyota Production System house. They're never mentioned at all in the theory of constraints notion. But demand flow technology, very similar. Costanza had this software that he was selling, and here's what he told people, and they bought it. You don't need to level load. If you have orders today of 50, fine. Tomorrow, 500, no problem. We can adjust to that. Our software can adjust to 250. We can go to 300 a day. We can go to 1,000 a day. Not a problem. We can handle all that. Only problem is, that's nice for the software. What about the people? What do you do with your people? What do you do with your, can you imagine having a dinner party? One night it's four people, it's your family, and next night it's 20 people. It goes back to three, then it goes back to 18 and then 12. Can you imagine trying to accommodate all that variation? This is why Tashiono put in Hijunka level scheduling over a given time period. It's a production control mechanism where you level load your production. Well, demand flow technology, I don't mean to talk much about that, but I'm trying to give you the comparison here where these people are out there trying to sell their software programs for millions of dollars, and they wrap it around some convoluted theory that appears to make a lot of sense. But when we spent a lot of time at Danaher dissecting this. We read the books. Matter of fact, I even think we might have visited Goelratt Institute because they were in Connecticut at the time. And we just looked at this and said, you know what? It flies in the face of lean philosophy and what we're trying to do with DBS, which is all based on the originators of the Toyota Production System, Shingijutsu, who are the lieutenants of Takeshi Ono. Okay, so we learned it from the horse's mouth, if you will. We didn't learn it from some, third-party consultant. And we also knew that if we threw TOC in there, because of all the conflicts, first people probably would gravitate towards it because it's easy, right, to do that. And secondly, it would confuse the heck out of our organization, and we didn't want that. So we rejected TOC out of hand. I have a client right now, and they were ensconced with the theory of constraints, and all they really are looking at is the bottleneck, regardless of the demand. And it took a long time for us to get them out of that. In question is whether or not they're still out of that. But when you look at the bottlenecks as their issue, and you ask them the question, "What's the demand on that piece of equipment?" The answer is, that machine is capable of producing 1,000 a day. It's not what I asked you. I didn't ask you what the machine's capable of. See, that's the thinking. That's what happens with theory of constraints, right? I asked you what the demand on that machine is. in order to hit our on-time delivery to their request date, customer request date. And ask you what it can produce. I want to know the demand. I couldn't care less right now what it's capable of. I need to know what the requirements are first. Okay, then I'll talk about capabilities later. So this whole idea is, hey, I'm going to just, my equipment is going to be what I'm going to produce today, regardless of demand. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Remember, TechTime doesn't care if your demand, if your machines break down, if your building catches on fire, if your employees go on strike. The demand is the demand. Okay, now, if you somehow continue to miss that demand, your customers are going to go elsewhere. And that is one of the biggest costs of poor quality that Deming talked about, that they're no longer going to buy it from you. They're going to buy it from somebody else. That's probably the biggest, he said, cost of poor quality. And I have an episode on cost of poor quality, too, if you want to listen to that. So the whole notion of making to customer demand in a just-in-time fashion, all right, in a flow environment, and where I can't flow, I pull. And I will put the inventory in a Kanban, okay, but I'll never push, all right? And I'll only go after my bottlenecks when, in fact, I need to, when I'm violating tack time. So we rejected TOC. We spent a lot of time on it. And, it's funny because when I would post on LinkedIn my comments about TOC, all of the TOC zealots came out of the woodwork and criticized me and said, you don't understand TOC. Well, let me tell you, we do understand TOC. We studied it very hard and considered it as a key element of the Danaher business system. And once we understood what this was all about and learned how much it conflicted with the tenets of the Toyota production system and the whole philosophy of lean, we rejected it out of hand. Okay. So there'll probably still be many people out there who disagree with me, but I'm not talking about this lightly. I'm not talking about this from a far away distance. We got right involved in this. We looked at it very carefully. We studied it. We read the books, and it made absolutely zero sense for us to implement the theory of constraints. Okay. I do have a presentation on this. And by the way, that presentation also does discuss how we thought about Six Sigma, which will be another episode for another day. And if you want that, you could email me at mark@lean911.com. mark@lean911.com. I'll be happy to send you that presentation. And if you have any questions on it, email me. We can get on a call. We can talk more about what we went through. But anyway, I hope this is helpful for you. And just remember this. There are zero silver bullets out there today. And you can continue to get consultants like John Costanza and Eli Goldratt, God rest his soul, okay, to try to sell you that silver bullet. There's no silver bullet. Trust me, there's not. It's hard work. It's fun work. It's rewarding work. And it will get you to where you need to go. It's all about the basics of standard work, the basic of flow, safety, quality, delivery, cost, the philosophy of just in time. Never pass a defect on to the next process. Always assure your quality, whether it's a product, whether it's information. Okay. All these philosophies, all these key concepts that I've been talking about in this podcast over various number of episodes. Well, we're on episode 42 right now. Those are the ones that work. There's no silver bullet. All right. And anytime somebody comes shining a shiny new tool, whether it be Six Sigma, boy, that was a silver bullet. My God, that was a disaster for GE. But nobody wanted to tell Jack Welch, the emperor had no clothes, right? I happen to know the two guys, one of them works for me right now, John Boucher, that said, they started this up in aircraft engines up in Vermont at their blade operation. And they told me that if Jack Welch knew they were bringing in the cow from Chingachgook, they probably would have been fired. Okay, so no silver bullets, all right? Anyway, Look forward to you again, Mark, at lean911.com. Email your thoughts, your comments, your barbs. I'm sure there'll be some people out there who disagree and want to kind of give me, read me the riot act. But look, this has been well thought out. This is not off the cuff analysis that we did on theory constraints. Okay. So anyway, we'll see you next time. This was episode 42, why the theory of constraints was not considered in the framework of the Danaher business system. Okay. See you next time. Thanks for listening to the Lean 911 podcast. I'll be happy to address your questions or feedback on future episodes. Email me at mark@lean911.com. You can check out our other episodes by visiting our website at lean911.com, our YouTube channel, wherever you listen to podcasts. This is your host, Mark DeLuzio. Thanks for listening.